Recording.
Yes, there we go.
Every time it just gets better and better.
It gets easier and easier.
Oh, it's so much hard. It's so hard. Okay. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Okay. Can you hear me all right?
I think so.
Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. Episode 14, The Validity of Graft.
Episode 14, The Validity of Craft. I'm going to say that again. Episode 14, The Validity of Craft. Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about the validity of craft.
Yeah.
LOL. So true.
Craft is so valid.
Okay.
It is. It is. Memes aside.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a declaration, like how we made the case for dumb stuff with Hillary Goodspeed. You should definitely check it out if you haven't.
Yes, go check it out. Hey, it's as we're recording this, it's like National Podcast Day today, I think.
Oh my God.
I saw on Twitter. I'll make a post about it.
Wait, how's it taking me this? Oh my God, it's taken me so long to say. Happy Halloween, Olive.
Happy Halloween to you too. In the future, but for now.
We record these in advance. You know how it is.
I have a tiny pumpkin.
Aww.
And I have a pumpkin tea light.
I ate one piece of candy corn today.
Sweet. Julie got some candy corn last night, so sweet. We were set up.
Mine's really stale.
Ah.
I know, I gotta do something about it. AKA crunchy. Buy more. Yeah, it's just so hard. It's like, why is it so hard? Okay, so happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, indeed.
Even though we're recording this way in advance. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Well, in advance, tomorrow's the first day of October.
I know. It's cool. I love the fall.
I do love the fall.
Okay, let's... That was our fun chat at the beginning. Halloween, but let's get into
it. We love
it.
Halloween. Let's talk about craft is valid.
Yes. I think the validity of craft, as I was saying, is kind of a... I don't want to say them's fighting words. What's like an educated way of saying them's fighting words? Like it's a reactionary statement? No.
Yeah, it's a tense subject.
Yeah, it's so tense. It's a hot take.
Yeah, it is. It's a hot take. Them's fighting words. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a tension between craft and design. Yes or no? What do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's, like, about, like, the people, like, who make, like, you know, quote, like, just craft and, like, just design, and it's, like, this kind of perceived, like, scale between them. It's, like, okay, you're, like, towards either the craft end or the design end, when it's really, like, not. It's, like, two sides of the same coin. It's, like, it's together. It's not, like, two opposites. It's, you need both. Like, you need to have one to have the other, you know?
Right. I think there's totally a tension. I think a lot of people base their whole practices on this tension exactly. I mean, maybe that's, like, oversimplifying things, but I think people are very reactionary about craft.
I would agree.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure why... Now, like, I can't really put into words, but I'm sure I'll be able to once we keep going. But there is 100% attention. There is 100% a tension, not attention. ATTENTION, LOL. A tension. Like in school.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say, like, especially being in the illustration department, the professors were strangely, like, anti- crafty, but like they're pro craft in like the skill of like making things.
Do you think it's because they were like it had something to do with being a gatekeeper, like craft is like maybe like lowbrow to them kind of, or like they're trying to discern? Yes. yeah
because a lot of the time it's like even if you did. It was, like, a lot of, like, fight about craft even within, like, mediums that were, like, you know, are typically, like, you know, more fine art. Like, there was, like, they would be have beef with watercolor, like, rather than paint. They'd be like, why are you using watercolor? Why don't you just fucking paint something? And it's like, they are. It's like, why is there's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's gatekeeping, and I don't even get me started on the beef a lot of them had with digital art. Oh, but then they also had shit about 3D stuff, where it's like if you brought in something that was like well-crafted three-dimensional piece of art, a lot of the times they would just be so stunned by the skill of that craft that they wouldn't actually like critique the piece. They'd just be like, oh my god, it's beautiful, look at this. It's like, well, actually, this image still has flaws. And coming from somebody who like did that, I'm like, okay, can you please like actually give me critique? Don't just say that it looks cool because it's 3D. Tell me what's wrong with it. That's my two cents.
Yeah. Okay, so this feels like a good time to separate craft into two definitions and kind of clarify what we're talking about when we say craft. So I think craft can be like creating a perfect model, which Olive was speaking about in the end of that anecdote. It's making like a hands-on one-off work that like lives on the production side of things. Is that kind of what you were talking about?
Yeah. Also, craft can be about like achieving high knowledge and like ability levels and like having good skills and perfecting your production.
Yeah, so maybe the tension is between like, especially in the context of your example, it's about production versus, like, thought or, like, critical, like, thinking behind a piece. Does that sound right, kind of?
Yeah.
So a lot of art school was kind of about designing with reproducibility in mind, because we live in a society, just kidding, but actually because the... Olive, you were in class with me reading The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, right?
Yes.
By Walter Benjamin.
Oh, yes.
Or Walter Benjamin, if you want to be American. Yeah. Basically, the thesis of that theoretical text, which, give it a read if you're interested.
Yeah, it was one of the better ones that we read that semester.
Yeah. The way, way oversimplification, which I just copied and pasted off Wikipedia and I'm going to read to you right now because I didn't want to reread the whole thing because I have other things to do. Mechanical reproduction devalues the aura, parentheses, uniqueness of an object d'art, an art object, aka a work of art that's not a painting. Okay, so basically in art school, we were in a commercial art program, right? Graphic design, illustration, art direction. And so I think the fact that it was a commercial art program meant that it was centered around, like, okay, is this commercially viable? Could this be reproduced in the New York Times tomorrow? Like, no. Like, if you're using glitter paint, like, it can't be. I'm kind of referencing something that happened. Didn't someone use glitter paint in your class? Yeah. It just doesn't reproduce well.
Makes sense.
All right. We live in a society.
We do.
The medium is the message. Another good text. The reproducibility and reproduction of art devalues its aura and its uniqueness.
Yeah.
We went to a commercial design and illustration program, and anything that caused reproducibility to be called into question was seen as, like, not fulfilling the goal of the degree.
Yes, yeah, they would immediately shoot down anything that was,
like,
not,
no discussion.
Like, yeah, no, they were like, this is not fine arts. They would literally say that. They'd be like, this is not fine arts. If you want to go do fine arts, go be a painting major, which was very harsh. Very harsh. There's intersections, guys. Yeah.
I mean, these barriers and walls that we make are so false. It's really all it is a helpful way to, like, think about things and, like, a tool. But when it becomes, like, you know, physical barrier, like...
Yeah, it's like you're making it. Everything you make is designed around reproducibility, first and foremost.
Yeah. You know, that, and also that Walter Benjamin paper is a critique of capitalism and commercial art.
Yeah.
Really good read.
It's good.
So I have a question for you, and then also maybe me after, yes. based on your answer.
Yes.
If I feel like I need to add something. Okay. Having to design with reproducibility in mind is at war with making an art object just for fun. Y/N. Yes or no? Is commercial art at war with craft?
I mean, like, yes. Because it makes, you're not making it just for fun. Like, if you are designing something with reproducibility in mind, you are not, like, from that moment, you've stopped thinking of it as something as, like, just for fun, really, and started thinking of, like, its commercial viability and, like, how it can be made into something that you can sell. Not that, like, you can't make yeah. fun things. Like, you know, I'll do a freaking little sticker thing and sell them, and that's fun.
Yeah, commercial art can be fun, and then yeah. also craft can be commercial.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yes and no.
Yeah, I think also
it's complicated.
Oh, it's so complicated. I kind of think they can be more married than people think, like you were kind of just suggesting. Like,
yeah.
Like, vinegar and olive oil in dressing that you get with your takeout salad. You ever do that? Which they separate, but then you shake them up and with force. You get them to
say, hey,
yep.
Craft and design are not at war.
But I feel like a good example of this is maybe the sketchbook in which you're drawing for fun. And then oftentimes, yeah. a la Greg Klutzel, like you yes. pull from your sketchbook, you being you, but also me, also anyone else. Does yes. this, and you take those drawings and like bring them into a commercial space. So I've lifted stuff for gig posters or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty common. So I think
yeah
the one-to-one is maybe not there. Like if I were to take something directly out of my sketchbook, take my iPhone photo and make that a gig picture, like I don't think that one-to-one thing would work. Like I don't think I'd be happy with it, but I think if I took 5 minutes in Photoshop or just slightly redrew on top of it, I think it would work. So I think the object d'art critique is like kind of about like kind of comes from a time where editing was less easy, you know. It's about the yeah. one-to-one object.
Yeah,
did that make sense?
Yes. Okay. yeah what you're saying is like yeah it's like the, you know, just using the picture and putting text on it is different than like, you know, being able to go in and edit and like create something. Like using the one-off object and like building upon it, is that what you're trying to say?
I think so, because yeah. I think you can also make, like, I've, companies, don't listen. Okay. I've taken stuff that I've done for work that's been rejected and made it, pulled it back down into craft or just, like, a different facet of, like, I've made it into something else.
Oh, yeah.
I took a rejected, this is what happened. Okay, so right before the pandemic, I was doing calendars for Babies All Right. Babies of, like, everything else in the world closed. I had started the April calendar and not gotten so far. Like, I was trying to be on top of it, so I started super early, and I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh my god, no. And then, you know, I was like, oh, I've wasted these hours making this, but you know what? Like, maybe I'll try to use it for something else, whatever.
Yeah.
And then someone approached me about an album cover, and I was like, hey, this could actually fit. And it did.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever pulled it back down to craft level. Maybe I've redrawn something in my sketchbook that I made for work.
Well, like, going off of that, it's like, because you're kind of, like, you're using that, like, one-off object and then, like, experimenting with it and, like, you know, changing it in different ways in, like, that, you know, using Photoshop, like, that kind of, like, mechanized, like, not typically thought of as craft way, but like it is like it's pretty crafty because you're experimenting with it. And I feel like, I don't know, a lot of times commercial art discourages experimentation of making like those one-off things. And even if it is for the sake of like making something commercial, they're like, don't do that. Don't experiment with it. Mm-hmm. Don't try something crafty or different if you don't know how to do it perfectly. Like it, like the time it takes to like iterate over it, they put like so much more emphasis on the efficiency of like how to create it than like, you know, taking the time to iterate and like make something new and try something different that could, you know, work out better in the end.
So you think the one-offness, not maybe the process of making, because you can make a silk screen, which is like,
yeah,
fairly commercial, but the one-offness is the thing about it that it makes it craft or in conflict with commercial art.
I wouldn't say that, like, because I'm not thinking of like you take like a silk screen and like draw on top of it. But I'm thinking, like, say you don't, say you're making that gig poster and you don't know how to use Photoshop real well, but you know how to take a really good photo, you know, and use type. Yeah. So, like, they're like, okay, like, I want to try editing this photo. I want to do some drawings on top of it in Photoshop. But, like, you know, the naysayers would say no.
Yeah. Can I rephrase, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You making one silk screen, only one, and it takes like 12 hours. It's the thing about it, even though silk screen is kind of a commercial process about reproduction, since it's just like one print and there's nothing else like it in the world, that one-offness puts it in conflict with the ethos of commercial art. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay, good to know.
'Cause, yeah, I feel like wasn't taking silkscreen at Pratt a lot like about making additions.
That was some fucking bullshit, but yeah, it was about making additions.
Yeah, and like, so to make one, they were like, it's about making additions. It's like, why? You could just make one. I mean, it's the same thing as like, you know, painting or making a drawing. It'd take you 12 hours and you only get one of them in the end.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe the ability to be reproduced, though, brings it back into the commercial world.
Yeah, yeah. Because even then you could just scan that silk screen and make prints of it,
it's true. You know? But you could do that for any... That's what I'm saying. You could bring it back and forth as much as you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Craft. Commercial. Craft. Commercial.
Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Okay, so we've gotten a little far off topic. Did we want to go over the end? Following a guide.
If you want to.
Maybe. Yeah, I get. Okay, so we've gotten so off topic, but we'll just go to our last point and then talk to our two very cool guests who live in a world between design and craft. Okay. So I think I want to defend craft for a second. Let's take the example of making lanyards or like friendship bracelets, right? You've done that. You've done some friendship.
Yeah. Business.
Okay. Beads, I don't know. All that. Okay, so that, making like a lanyard or something still involves some level of design, but it's definitely a different part of your brain than like critically thinking about like, why am I using these materials to make a lanyard? What purpose does a lanyard serve? Etc. So it's not like strategic design. It's more about, like, visual elements, like color theory, like 3D spatial design, because you have to make dimensions of your bracelet, pattern making, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and that's, like, a very, like, necessary part of craft to, like, teach you how to, like, learn to think critically. Because, like, even, like, in, you know, making a friendship bracelet, it doesn't seem like you're, you know, designing much, but you're thinking about colors, you're thinking about what you like, what kind of pattern you want to make, you're paying attention to your handwork, like, while you're doing it, like, it's a very necessary, like, learning tool for, you know, to get into other, like, higher levels of, like, thinking about design. You need to learn somehow.
Totally. And we're down for craft's sake.
Yes,
it's cool, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with
it. It's fun.
And if, yeah, like, if you don't do the theoretical thinking, that's totally fine too.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that's what I mean, I do that a lot of time with, like, when I'm just, like, felting, yeah, something, sometimes I just make a little guy. I'm like, okay, he's blue. I like yellow. Let's make him have little yellow wings. There we go. He's done.
Oh, I'm proud. We went so fast on this one. I thought, yeah, this was going to take mad long to get, ooh, through. Because that was some heavy stuff about craft. Yeah. Okay.
No, but we had good outline. I'm going to stop the recording now.
Oh, wait, keep it going for a sec. Okay. Stop, yeah, it yet? Okay.
No.
Okay, cool. I kind of wanted that to be in there, like, oh my god, we got through it all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'll stop it now, though.
Wait, I've got...
Wait, did you stop it yet? Or...
You can stop it. I'll just say the next part. Okay. First, we're going to talk to Adam Scheffler of Aimless Arrow Embroidery, and then after that, we'll sit down with Joy Fulton of The Dainty Heart. But first, ads. This first ad is actually an ad for making ads on Cold Email. If you love listening to the podcast and have $5 burning a hole in your pocket, yes, only $5, you should sponsor Cold Email if you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but you get a lot. It's a great value. For the low, low price, me and Olive will mention your name, business, website, product, etc. during an episode of Cold Email. Also included in this price is a small blurb, and or we will say something nice about you and your work. So you can also just give us $5 to compliment you. That would be fine too, publicly. By giving us only $5, here are a few things you can do. You can advertise your Dirty Grunge Procreate brush set. You can drive traffic to your sick new publishing project, up your sales or whatever. You can solicit art and design submissions for your self-published magazine, promote your sweet upcoming gallery show in Bushwick, have award-winning art directors hear your name and blurbs about your work, find a studio mate, say something nice about your friend as a fun, inexpensive, and unexpected birthday gift, and buy me and Olive 2 separate cups of coffee, although... $5 doesn't get you as much as it used to, and $2.50 sure doesn't, but it will get you an ad on Cold Email. So if you're interested, you can go to cold-email.tumblr.com/sponsor.
Part 2, the interview with Adam Scheffler of Aimless Arrow Embroidery.
Adam Scheffler is a Rochester, New York-based chain-stitch embroiderer and screen printer. He operates his embroidery business under the name Aimless Arrow Embroidery. Aimless Arrow offers custom, completely analog chain-stitch embroidery, live chain-stitch events, and denim repair. If it can fit under his 1929 Singer 114W103 machine, he can stitch it. Adam also runs a screen printing and apparel shop called Outer Heaven. Okay, so thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're talking about craft, and craft both as in, like, the skill of making, but also, like, in opposition to, like, design and critical thinking, but also in combination with those things. It's a hefty one.
Yeah, that sounds crazy. You sure, did you pick the right guest?
Yeah, we did. I guess we'll see.
You're good.
So, I guess we'll take it away from there.
Yeah. So our first question is, in like the style of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, what came first, the craft or the design? And also personally, like for you, which did you get into first, like designing or crafting?
Oh, that is a great first question. So I guess that all stems from my love of like the fashion industry and clothing and style. I didn't really know it at the time, but growing up, I just never really fit into any category as far as like dress and how I actually like styled myself. So I just kind of always ran against the grain and was doing different things. The Salvation Army was like my best friend, but getting into being obsessed with like fashion and style and design, that kind of made me want to carve out my own space or try to figure out how I fit into that or how I could contribute to that. So I think the design really came first because I was trying my hand at many different things, whether that be sewing, you know, getting a sewing machine and then trying different projects, whether it be making a t-shirt or buying a roll of, you know, selvedge denim and trying to make some jeans, you know, trying to do something like that, or On the flip side, printing t-shirts, you know, that the design of that was like, okay, so what, how do I tweak these patterns, or how do I, what designs do I want to put on t-shirts? So it was kind of an offshoot of the things that I was interested in, whether that be designing shirts for bands, or even as far back as like the bike polo scene. When I was big into bike polo, we had different clubs, and we would design, you know, team shirts. We'd only print a handful of them because there was only a few of us on the team, but it was kind of trying different things. And then I landed on chain stitch embroidery through just trying to do a little bit of everything, or try everything, you know, try to do something different. And chain stitch embroidery was something that I happened to just stumble on. And it's also like tattoo culture kind of like helped play a part in that, because I've always been obsessed with tattoos and different artists. And I think it also, that also comes from the hardcore and punk music scene, is just one of those things that goes hand in hand. So you're just immersed around that kind of culture. And I've always been obsessed with that. So this was my way. My drawing skills have never been great, but this was a way to incorporate, you know, I may never become a tattoo artist or a great artist with painting or pen, but to be able to do chain stitch embroidery is kind of like tattooing thread on cloth. So that might be the long-winded version of the design coming before the actual skill. So I've just honed that skill in after.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we like long-winded here. and I think it was pretty concise, but okay. So our next question we wrote, honestly, I'm going to say it all. It doesn't make sense.
That's okay. Given,
but yeah, we were going to add, like, it was going to be like, oh, like which came first, the design or craft? And then, so you said design, and mm-hmm. the next was going to be like, oh, and then the craft. But obviously that came about as just like, you know, wanting to be better, like a better maker, right? Do you kind of feel that way?
Yeah, I think wanting to be a better maker, and just really, I always get like a weird fanboy celebrity over like the smallest little things. If someone makes like a leather belt, I'm like, oh wow, this is so cool. And everyone's like a rock star to me. Like, so it's whether it's like that, or a jean maker, or, you know, I find all these things and then I really cling to them and they become like this big thing to me. So even if I were to meet the owner of this brand or any of that other stuff, or go to a pop-up, that to me, I'm like, oh my God, am I really here? Is this really happening? Like, I wanted to find my spot of how can I contribute? How can I create things that, you know, how can I create really anything that is going to be, that's going to mean something to someone? Or how can I create something that I'm going to, that I don't care what people think about it, but it allows me to create and get it out there in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a bit about creative communities, but which, you know, are, interesting, these like weird niche communities, but I'll let
absolutely
Alf ask the next question before we get there. But
mm-hmm. yeah, so during our A portion of this, we talked about like the validity of craft and how, like, you know, there's like a push pull between like designers and craft oftentimes. And do you ever like feel pushback for being like too much of a designer or like too much of a crafter, like from both sides?
For me, I don't know, when people really get to know you, I think people are more accepting. So potential clients or even clients that we've done work for before, when you go through it, they're more open to allowing you to go through the motions and your own process. So I don't want people to come to me being like, I would like this thing. I want them to come to me because I want this thing from you. So if they're okay with my design process and my end result, whether it be screen printing or chain stitch embroidery, mainly my embroidery, because that's what I focus on, but I want them to come because they want me to do it. And I am a little sensitive, so when I do get pushback as far as the design process, I do my best to not tell people, like, hey, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This is like, I'm sorry, I didn't know if we were able to spare it out, but hey, okay. Like, this looks better, or this is more aesthetically pleasing. You know, some people are bozos and don't know what is actually going to work for the medium that you work in. So if I'm doing something and some people don't understand what chain stitch embroidery is, so they'll come to you wanting some wild piece that they're maybe not understanding is actually done by hand with a machine. They want some computer generated thing. And the translation between what I design on a computer to the finished product on felt or fabric, whatever that be, is like I have to design with that in mind. So the pushback there, I think I get a little extra leeway. I'm able to be like, hey, the design is this way because this is the craft that I'm involved in. So the pushback, usually when I can be detailed and let them know, I think the pushback is like minimal. But it's also a good way of like calling out some of the bad clients, because then rather than try to like chase every job, you'll know who's going to be open to your design early on. And if you are able to ask certain questions, you'll know by the responses whether, like, okay, I'm going to have a little bit more of a hard time with this. That might be a little more harsh on my process. So you can kind of like pick and choose what jobs you actually want to work on. And I think that's really important, because in the end, we don't want to waste any time on stuff that, you know, that A, we're not going to love, or B, you know, I'm doing all of this work and the payoff is very small, or, you know, the client is just not going to be happy regardless of whatever I do. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like designing, there's like a way to design with craft in mind that like people kind of get like accustomed to once they're more on the production side. So just calling out that intersection.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
So craft communities. This one's, and I'll preface this by saying that I was once, I'm a retired design painter, and that, like, there were a lot of Facebook groups, and there was, like, intense, like, drama and hate and, like, mean critiques. And I also, you know, I also have a rug tufting gun and do that. That's a much nicer space, those forms. And then I think we're part of a few of the same forms for chain stitching. There's a couple Facebook groups. So I guess I answered, are you part of a niche craft community? Obviously, yes, but maybe.
Yes. Yeah, so I am. And I am part of some niche craft communities. And I'll say this, use them as a tool and a resource for what you can. Recognize those spaces and be aware, because it doesn't matter what you're in. There's a lot of gatekeepers, and there's a lot of like, there's a lot of weird people who, I think of it as like YouTube videos. Everyone wants to be the guy, right? Everybody wants to be that person who knows everything and gives the information or holds it back. Oftentimes that can be damaging, in that the information that they're trying to push on everyone is wrong, you know, or some of these things, people are sponsored by a certain company or brand and then push these things only. Okay, so when I exist in a space, and we'll use chain stitch embroidery as an example, because nobody hates me more than me, so if anyone gets offended, it's fine. It's really ridiculous. People are ridiculous in these groups because they have all these little factions, and they go into these different groups, or you'll see that people are not part of certain groups because of those drama little aspects. Oh, well, this person, you know, did an iron cross patch, so they must stitch for Nazis. Well, I'm not going to be part of that group. You know, things like that that don't make any sense, and they're blown out of proportion. It's a very weird thing. So people align themselves with certain other people. And it's very strange to me, because the chain stitch community in and of itself, in my opinion, at least here in the U.S. and maybe even across the world, there's really not that many. If I had to place it in the U.S., I'd put it definitely I'd even go so far as to say less than 500. But that being said, so how I've actually chosen to combat that is, again, sitting on the sidelines. If and you'll know this from being in the Facebook groups, I don't post ever. I don't post and I don't comment any of that. But I will stay there, and if anyone needs my help, they can ask me. Or if there is anything, event or anything else, it's good to share information and post about those things. Now, also what I've done to combat that is I have, you know, my own little like IG live podcast type deal that I talk about community every episode. I hammer it in and really talk about the importance of community. And we do a patch swap, an exchange, so that everyone can just be friends with everyone. There's no obligation. You can just make a fun little patch and trade it with your buddies once a month. And it's just a cool thing. And then if anyone has problems or things they need help with, they can, you know, hit us up, throw questions on the show. We answer stuff so that we can all learn. And I always say, I mean, it sounds cliche or whatever, but when one person wins, we all win, you know? So there's no gatekeeping. There's no nothing. We want everyone to succeed, because if someone's doing something cool or someone is better at the skill than I am or than someone else is, you're pushing all of us, right? So we're not going to sit here and like rip everyone off and like, oh, you did this design of Felix the Cat, so I'm going to, you know, I need that. I'm going to do a Felix the Cat. Okay, that's just that's a very like played out Creative Commons character that everyone likes to stitch, which is fine, because it's Felix is cool. It's a cool design and it's fun. It's simple, not a lot of colors, but I get sidetracked and I'm off on this tangent and I get so like heated about certain things. I don't like the gatekeeping. I think that it's dumb. When someone is able to push us to do something better or has a technique or anything, they don't even have to share it. But if they share it in a way that we can see it, you don't have to tell me anything about it. But just having that available to push all of us further. I want you to be better than me. I want you to do cooler things and have innovative ideas. Chain Stitch, I mean, we're living in way past the point where these people ever thought these machines would exist. Because when they were first made, I mean, we're talking 1860. These people are making, you know, lace for wedding dresses or doing curtains or, you know, large textile projects where they're just doing freehand motion and doing little like filigree and little motions, right? So if you were to tell them, hey, in 100 years we'll be using these machines to make the craziest shit you've ever seen, they'd be like, no, you're lying. That's ridiculous. Get out of here. But now that we have computers and we can mix in the design aspect instead of just doing freehand stuff, it's changed the game. So I want, where can it go? I think that's with every craft. As time goes on and new ideas are presented, how can we push it further? And that's why I think gatekeeping is bullshit. I think people being rude and negative in any way is just ridiculous, because we should be building each other up, because when one person succeeds, we all stand to benefit from that. And especially in a niche area like chain stitch embroidery, there is more than enough work for everybody. If this is your if it's your main thing, that's fine. If it's your hobby, there's more than enough stuff to stitch. And if you don't think so, hit me up. You can have some of my projects. I'll let you do them. So like, let me know. I love it so much. But I think a lot of these groups, especially Facebook, I think they're insidious. I don't think the social media platform like that contributes. I don't think it contributes more good than the harm that it does. So yeah.
No, absolutely. I was just nodding the whole time. I was like, that's so true. The Facebook group is weird. And a lot of things that are there, I'm like, is this like real?
So they're the worst.
Yeah, we'll talk off here.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we can do that. Okay, because I have questions. Yeah, it's amazing that you and Huck make yourselves such resources. Huck is the other person on the Instagram live turned podcast. Which yeah. I would love if you uploaded more to YouTube, by the way, because watching them on Instagram Live sucks.
Or the, yeah, I the have arc. To I have to get on Huck, because I gotta be honest, Huck is like, I'm like the idea talking kind of like person. And then Huck is like the guy behind the scenes who's like really crushing it. But yeah, I will get on him because it is important. and getting off of a social media platform just because if something goes away, we still need to have all those things.
So, well, yeah. Public accountability.
Right, yes, there. Correct. But yeah. Yep.
No, that's such a, as you were typing, Olive and I have a document that we communicated, not like to like talk shit, just to be like, like this person answered this question, like, do you think this is whatever. I wrote, like, that's such a nice point of view, like, what a nice teacher thing to say, because it's great. I don't know, I think we try to interview people that are like see like white space in the world, or that it's like not just that there's something wrong, that like, and they're trying to make it like a more just, well-informed, righteous world. Not to get all like that, but no, I don't know. Yeah. I was like very touched when you said all that.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I am a very, outside of these spaces, I'm a very cynical person. I am naive to a fault. Whoa. So when I actually, when I think about like, when it comes to the craft and when it comes to design and stuff like that, I am naive and I'm like, nothing can go wrong. People are great. You know, everything's awesome. But in real life, I'm like, oh man, this is the worst. But when it comes to chain stitch and creative spaces, I think that there is a lot of good that can come from that. And I don't ever want to see the bad in people, because I just don't, there's no room for it. we all have stuff going outside of those things that it's like, yeah, you know, let's just try and see the positive side of it and do the best we can.
Yeah, hold on. I have an anecdote, but my roommate is teaching a vocal lesson right now, so I'm going to switch rooms real quick.
I think I also hear a cat.
You can hear Julie probably.
Yeah.
Give me one sec.
Totally fine. I've got my French bulldog here laying on my
oh my god, leg. I was like, what is that?
So if you hear like a snoring noise, he's like muzzled up. Yeah,
so sweet.
Yeah, he's a very, very sweet boy.
Very nice. Oh, in this meantime, I'll just say, from one New York accent to a totally different one, I love it. I love the synergy.
Thank you. Yes, it's good.
Okay. We're back, Hale. There's a French bulldog. I don't know if you saw.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's true. Oh, cutie.
Charlie the Angel Boy.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm now sitting on my kitchen floor. And sorry for my
towel. No, you're totally fine.
It's a very small apartment.
Yeah.
It's Friday night.
I'm like, it feels like a Tuesday. I'm like, it's Friday. I'm sitting on my kitchen floor doing an interview. But to jump back into like the communities, I don't chain stitch, but I do like needle felting. Yeah. And I think like relating that to like rug tufting as like a more like the more textile based crafts, I think, that are like a little less mechanized, so they're like easier for like people of all skill ranges to like get into and like be active on forums like that. Like I'm part of a felting Discord, actually, that's really great. I haven't been on it in a couple months, but I love to talk about it because they have channels for like all different skill levels. So if you're like just beginning and you just want to like show people your stuff and they're going to be like, wow, this is great, there's like a channel for that. And if you want legit critique, there's like a channel for that, which I think is really nice. I love that they have, you know, different areas for people of all skill ranges. It's really great. And also like I teach sometimes too. So like, as we were saying, you know, like having that kind of like open environment for people to be able to learn and be welcomed into the community is really great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, really, when you think about it, if you're not learning and you just want to stay the same, what's the point? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are such rare teachers though, because I feel like I've had, there's just like a lot of people that like do it for the wrong reasons maybe, and just like want to either gatekeep like things for themselves, like they don't want their students to get their jobs, or they're just like not interested in making things accessible. I don't know, so you guys give me hope.
And it's very, I agree with that, and I'm glad I teach lessons as well in Chain Stitch. And I have had, there's been really of any knowledge base, people who have already Chain Stitch or people who haven't. And actually Huck is a good example of someone who I've taught and then has gone on to, you know, he's excelled. And he was one of the great students that I had that was actually, he's talking about teaching lessons as well. And I think that's great. You know why? Because then I can stitch more and he can teach people. And that, it just works out. So if people want to hit him up, and I think it's personality based as well. You know, do you want, who do you want to teach you? You know, if you were going to go that route. And there's just different things. I think there's a lot of people who just want to be at the top of the mountain, but they don't want to climb, you know? So it's a very interesting thing that we all do.
Yeah. And some people really subscribe to the scarcity is good mentality. Like there's just not enough work in this world for all of us. It's a limited amount. And you know, we're so many people. So for me to succeed, like you all cannot, the right. no win, zero sum thing, which is just not the case.
Right. Yes.
In, I think, our all humble opinions.
Yeah, to use like that mountain metaphor, it's like some people are standing on the top of it and they're like, nope, there's no room up here, and they're actively beating people back. And it's like, okay, well, you can either stand up there and pretend there's not enough room for everyone, or you could help them up too.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. And it's just I don't know, but I think social media kind of ruins everything as well, because they make everyone, you can choose what you want to post, so everything's a highlight reel. So when you do get to the top of the mountain, you can be, you know, the, you could be the king of everything, but you'll never you'll never show the struggles and the things that you went through, or the people that helped you get there. You'll never hear about a mentor or someone that taught you. You won't see any type of contribution. It's kind of like a me. Excuse me, seltzer, terrible. Yeah, it's always my achievements, and these are all the things that I'm doing, which is cool. I love that, and I love seeing people's stuff. But, you know, on the other side of that, when you try to, like, hold everything to you and you only want to be the one occupying the space at the top, it's just, I don't know. I think that it shows. If you're not putting out positive stuff, it shows your character, and people really know about that. Well, I'll get to it. There was a Chain Stitcher. There was a Chain Stitcher that was on a podcast one time, and he was bashing all of the up and comers that he saw on Instagram, talking about how, you know, their work wasn't good. I see a lot of stuff out there. It's just bad. And to me, I had never listened to the podcast before, and I listened only because that Chain Stitcher was on there. And so to hear that kind of stuff, I'm like, wow, okay. So this guy, you know, that's the energy I'm trying to avoid. I want everybody to be there, because it's not, the top of the mountain isn't just a point, you know, there's like a big field where we all can stand. So.
Yeah, it's a plateau. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Obviously some people are jerks. I mean, that's like unavoidable in reality, like real life. Like you go on the subway and like, let's say half the people, let's say 20% of the people are jerks. I'm gonna do a high non-jerk estimate here in New York City. Okay, so like you would kind of expect that general like aggregate population like dynamic to show up in anything. Like you kind of have to. So of course there's gonna be jerks, and it definitely is a bummer that Instagram is a portfolio site and kind of can easily make you doubt yourself sometimes. But I just want to complicate things and say we wouldn't be here without Instagram. I totally, like, I found out about your work and, sorry, the roofers are here. I got distracted. But, oh God, I lost it. Oh yeah, it's amazing that it allows us to connect to each other. And I know, like, that's, like, a dumb, like, it's like kind of touchy-feely, but like literally we wouldn't be here without it, so just want to recognize that positivity.
Yeah.
In it.
I don't want to be a downer. On the flip side, it is awesome because you do get to meet a lot of great people, and also you can tune out on any of the negative stuff, anything that makes you feel bad or any way that isn't good to you, you can just tune it out, which I think is great. I don't want to badmouth it, because it really is the platform that I use the most and only put my effort really into that, if I'm going to put an effort in at all. And it's been good because I do a lot more commission-based work all around the country rather than in my city straight up. So it's been a good balance. I haven't really made my local presence known. I have, but not, I spend a lot of time on these commissions, so I'm not able to go and like peddle my wares to shops very often. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think that kind of leads us to the point. We'll talk about Chain Stitch for just a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. If that's okay. So it's crazy that chain stitching is a mechanized thing, but it's completely analog, and things can be easily reproduced, but only with like man hours. And there's just no, I cannot stress this enough, no digitalization of any process, no mechanization, or just no computers. And we were kind of talking about craft as something that's about making one-offs that are like unique, and if you've ever, we referenced some theoretical texts even. I can't believe running out of time, it's fine. I don't know, I guess the point, like, design is for reproducibility and craft is for one-offs. That was kind of like our thesis there. So just if you want to talk about that, chain stitching. Yeah.
And it's so funny because now that we do have the ability to do all of our design work and then kind of translate that with this machine, and it's something that you have to explain all the time. And I think that's one of the great things about markets is so people can actually, I'll take the machine there and set up so people can actually see it. So if they don't know what it is, it's there. And also I would like to say that like, if you put digital chain stitch next to actual chain stitch embroidery, it is two very different things. So people will be like, well, I've seen chain stitch embroidery. Well, yeah, you have, but you've seen a computer do it. This is all by hand. And so the one-offs, even if it isn't a one-off, if you go, I'll do a patch run for a client or any of that. And I did, what was it? I'll just use an example. I did 13 patches for this beauty studio that was opening up. And you can do that. It will take time, but you can kind of like hone in your process, but it doesn't matter because none of those will be the same. Each one of those patches will look different regardless because you are doing this all, this is all analog. And goodness, I'm running on I'm drawing a blank, but the design process, I actually have to try to keep that in mind when I'm doing a patch that I plan on reproducing a bunch, because I don't want that patch to take me forever. Because since we're doing this by hand, if it's going to be something that I sell to a shop or carry at a market, it needs to be something that I can do in a relatively short amount of time. So anything that I sell in an online marketplace, I try to make sure that those designs are done in mind that I need to be working less than an hour, preferably a half an hour on this patch if I'm going to be mass producing it, or God forbid, doing it made to order. So I think.
Oh, it's all about calculating the high wages.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I pivot like crazy.
So the it's about the wages. Like, I want to create these crazy things all the time, and I've got a zillion designs sitting on a stack in my studio, but I just need the time to do them. But when I'm doing that stuff, it's like, okay, so I'm going to do this passion piece that I really love, not really for anyone, and it might not sell, but I'm running this as a business, and if my bills don't get paid, I'm screwed. And this was like me venturing off and starting this business was something like, I'm not ready to like, it's always learning and fighting and struggling. It's not always the glamour shots that everybody shows. So with this, I'm trying to keep that in mind so that I can make money to pay bills and then do the fun stuff.
I think that's a super good insight about, because it feels like everyone's succeeding and you're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's nice to hear that and remember that. We actually have a few. Okay, so I don't know if you know, I think I might have mentioned it, this episode is coming out on Halloween. So we have a few Halloween themed questions.
I love
that. If you're okay with that. Okay, great.
Absolutely.
question. We're just short answer. Like, Olive and I are going to trade off. Okay. Number one, do you love Halloween?
Yes. Absolutely. Halloween is so sick, and I'm a weird costume guy. So I just love, I'll get fixated on a costume and then wear it until it's dead.
We love to hear it. Next question. What's your favorite Halloween candy?
Ooh, okay. So this is great. And probably no one will be surprised by this. I really love like old man candies. So anything butterscotch is incredible. They make these like things and I can't remember the names of them, but they're little black and white bars. They're just peanut butter. It's like a little peanut butter wafer thing. And if anyone can tell me the name, I would love you forever so I can buy these in bulk. But whenever I see them in some store, they've probably been sitting there for 5 years. I just buy them all and then eat them.
Breaking the format to say, I just realized you're in Rochester, right?
Yeah.
You have six slits?
Yeah.
Yeah, that shit's gross. I've only had them upstate. Okay, sorry. Back to the format. Did you have a good Halloween last year?
Last year's Halloween was ass. Obviously, with the pandemic, it's kind of like a bummer. But definitely like dressed up and sat around the house. Kids don't really come in our neighborhood. So it was really more of like order a pizza, watch scary movies, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. Hoping to change that up this year.
What's your costume this year?
Ooh, that is, I want to let the cat out of the bag.
If it's private, it's coming out on Halloween.
This is breaking, well, it won't be breaking news when everyone hears it, but, so my fixated costume for the year is, those inflatable Pikachu costumes. So it's like this big asshole, Pikachu that I can barely, like I have to walk sideways through a doorway. It's got like a fan built into it. And I'm telling you, when I get like childlike wonderment, I'm talking like the mailman comes and I am like, I'm waiting for Santa to come put something under the tree. This dude brought this costume and I immediately shredded the packaging and put it on to try it. It doesn't matter that it's not Halloween, but yeah, this giant, it's asinine. And I don't think I'll be able to do anything in it, but stand there looking like a giant nightmare. But that is my costume for this year.
That's so funny.
That's okay. Amazing.
I thought our last one was a question, but I just wrote, have a spooky day. So I guess that's it.
That's perfect. Yes.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. Thanks for having me. That was great.
You can find Adam's work at aimlessarrowembroidery.com and on Instagram at aimlessarrowembroidery.
Part 2, the interview. With Joy Fulton of the Dainty Rug.
Joy Fulton is a 2D / 3D illustrator and animator based in Chicago. Their work consists of bright, punchy colors and simple friend-shaped buddies. She takes a lot of her inspiration from her time when she was a teacher assistant at a daycare and an after-school art teacher for kindergartners. They've recently been experimenting with textiles, mainly rug making and needle punching.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, hey. Thank you for being here.
First of all, I love your name and the spelling of it. Very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we're going to talk about craft and design first, and then we have some fun Halloween questions at the end.
Yeah. Right. So I guess I'll start it out. So in like the style of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, like what came first, the craft or the design, like for you?
I feel like, that's a hard question. Oh, man. I mean, I guess the design first, since I was already making art anyway, so, like, the ideas were there. It was just a matter of, like, what do I do with them? And I guess I can say my parents are also very crafty, so, I mean, they kind of, like, push the craft aspect on to me a lot. So yeah, I would say the design definitely came first and then the craft later. But nowadays I feel like they happen simultaneously. So, sorry. That's my cat. Sorry.
No, that was, I like that.
Yeah, so definitely designed first, but as of recently, they happen at the same time, so.
Yeah, our next question is about what drew you into the act of physical making, but maybe you could just speak a little more to, like, if you want, your like upbringing with craft or how your parents were into it and how that maybe influenced you.
Yeah, so my parents, they were both pretty creative. My dad, he was like into like painting and things, and my mom kind of just did whatever she was doing in school. And then I picked up on it very quick. And then also I was very much in like the world of daycare at a very young age. And I mean, all of us have been in school and know like pretty much all school is very like craft oriented, and you're like constantly like making things and whatever. So that definitely like pushed me like being into like making things, whether it be like paper mache or like doing like clay and like Play-Doh and stuff. But yeah, and doing all that growing up, and then my mom teaching at daycares. I personally taught at a daycare for like 4 years, so like always kind of pushing like what I can do and stuff in spaces like that. And then eventually leading to me opening like my own shop and then making things there. Like I think when I opened up an Etsy like in high school, and the first thing I made were like Shrinky Dinks and stickers. The best thing ever. Like I still have like all my old Shrinky Dinks from when I started. But yeah, that kind of like started it all, and then like now I'm selling like keychains, notepads, and all that type of stuff. So yeah.
That's cool. So your shop has kind of been like a constant for you in your like practice in the past few years. Do you feel like it's kind of like pushed what you were making in a certain direction? Like, do you feel like you were making things because of your shop, or do you feel like it was just kind of a place to put things that you had made?
At the beginning, I think I was just making things and I was like, oh, this would be cool in a shop. Like, let me just add it in there. But definitely, like, nowadays, my design choices are a lot more intentional. But then still too, like a lot of my keychains now are just like things I've already made and just want to turn them into stuff. So it kind of just like depends on how I'm feeling at the time. But I mean, now than it was before, I definitely consider what I choose to be a product versus just like throwing anything out there, because it's like, oh, well, they might like this over this, or like maybe I should tweak this up before I put it as a product instead of just like tossing it in there. So.
So during like the A part, like we talked a lot about how like craft and design are kind of like, you know, the two sides of like the same coin. Like they both serve each other and they both kind of need each other to like, you know, help each other out. But a lot of people act like it's a sliding scale, and that like if you do too much design, you can't do craft, and you do craft, can't do design. And like, do you ever feel that like push-pull between that?
Sometimes doing my shop stuff, it does like take over a lot, because like even within craft there's like the business side of it, I guess, like running a shop and then like numbers, which I absolutely hate. Like I cannot stand like keeping up with things like that. But that's just like part of it. So like there are just some moments where like I just have to either put my shop on like hiatus, or just like kind of take down certain products, or just like I don't feel like dealing with having to create that at the moment, and then just like focus on the design aspect of it. Because I feel like I'm actually kind of going through that right now with my shop, because a lot of the products I have, it's a lot of the same stuff and just like reiterations of the same thing. And now I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm tired of looking at this, like it's time to switch it up. So I've been taking a step back from my shop, and orders are kind of been slowing down anyway, which I guess a normal person would be like, no, that's terrible. But I'm just actually like, oh, cool, that's great. I have like some time to like take a step back, see what I got, what people like, what's not really hitting, and kind of focus on what new things I can make for that space. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, completely agree. It's like, I think super healthy to like take a step back from it. Like it doesn't always need to be like constant growth with like a shop like that. Like I have my own, it's like, I don't sell that much, but it's like, sometimes you need to like take a, you know, reassess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt like at moments I like wanted to just have like constant, like, yeah, I'm making sales, but then kind of seeing people who are experiencing that, I'm like, I can't imagine. I get stressed out with like 10 orders or like at the max, I think I've had like 20 orders at one time, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is like too much, I can't deal with this. So at one point the dream was having just like nonstop sales, like I'm doing this, but now like doing freelance full time and running a shop, and then I also have like my Patreon too, which that's just like a whole nother thing. It's just like, no, I appreciate it so much when like sales slow down or whatnot, because it's a lot. Like, it's cool, it's awesome. I can say like I'm a small business owner and running my own shop, but there's so much behind the scenes and stuff on top of like whatever else you're doing. So it's, the breaks are appreciated.
Yeah, like you're running essentially like three businesses in one, like freelance, Patreon, and Etsy. So it's like, yeah, it's a lot, but I mean, you make great work.
I'm going to pivot a little to craft communities, right? Like forums or Facebook groups or like an Instagram page or group chat or whatever. Are you part of like a niche craft community? Do you seek instruction that way? Do you feel like it's useful if you do?
I don't think I've really ever been a part of any craft like circles. I feel like the closest thing to that was when I started rug making. I joined like a little like rug making group just to like see what people are doing and like if we all had like questions, because I'm pretty sure most of us joined that because we saw like people making rugs on TikTok, so we had no idea what we were doing. But yeah, like most of like my insight or like instructions that I got was just like hopping on YouTube or something, or just like reading forums, but not exactly like engaging with those spaces. Not because I didn't want to, I just like, I mean, I was too shy to even like put myself like into those spaces and stuff. But now I'm a bit more, I kind of enter those spaces, but not to the point that I'm like a regular. And also I talk to my mom like all the time. Like she does like crocheting and like has her little Etsy shop, so we kind of like bounce stuff, ideas off of each other, and like I help her out a lot, like figuring out what to do, and she helps me when she can. So yeah,
that's so sweet. Also, I'm totally a shy lurker too. Like I'm like, I appreciate like that you're writing this to whoever I'm like reading it from, but it's kind of a big deal to put yourself out there in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like dynamics and politics and spaces, not to get all like that, but people act weird sometimes, so you know, sometimes it is like putting yourself out there on the internet.
Yeah, even like just like in general, like me being on like social media and stuff, like I guess like online I could seem like very like outgoing and like, wow, she's like talking so much, and I like most of the time I'm very quiet unless you know me, then I talk way too much. But yeah, most of the time I'm like very shy, like what I'm like putting out. And I'm sure if you like catch up with me on Twitter, like I have like so many typos. So like, obviously I'm not really paying attention like when I'm typing very well. But yeah, it's very nerve wracking, like just putting yourself in those spaces and stuff. But like the craft communities that I have seen, and my mom is like in all that type of stuff, so I kind of like see through her eyes what those are like, and they can be like super fun and welcoming. And then it's so funny when she tells me like, oh, she's like, oh Joy, there's like crochet drama happening, like yarn drama. I was like, oh my gosh, like tell me, spill the tea, like what's going on. So it's interesting. But yeah, I'm very shy, so it's rough, but it's kind of fun just being like a lurker, just like, oh, what's this, what's that, but grab resources and things like that. So
So I think we'll pivot again to some Halloween questions now. Do you have anything
Oh, wait,
like?
Wait, Olive.
Oh wait,
I think we skipped the. Yeah. the medium specifics.
Oh yes, yes. No, I'm
we
sorry.
Don't have a, we're the bad. Producers. And you know how it is.
Yeah.
DIY.
Not Halloween yet, but how do you like handle like the more like manufactured stuff in your shop? That's like keychains and pins, etc., versus like the handmade stuff, like rugs that need to be like made one by one. Like, do you have like a process with those or?
Things like that are manufactured, depending on like what the product is. If we're just talking about like keychains and stickers, those are very like straightforward. Especially when you already have work created, it's just a matter of like I personally use Sticker App, Sticker Ninja, and this one's a bit of a hot take, but I also use Sticker Mule, which I'm kind of pulling away from because they have a bit of a dicey past. But it's just like pulling art, dropping it onto their website, and they already have like on-site design tool, so that kind of makes the process pretty easy. But when it comes to like my plushies, like I have my little keychains, that was kind of just honestly a very like kind of a scary like process to do, because like you're at that point you're directly talking to the factories and like manufacturers that are making it, and there's resources online how to like what to ask, like how to communicate with them as far as like what type of questions and things or like things you need to offer them to make your product. But it can be very daunting. It's also very expensive. But once you like get through all those hoops and everything, like kind of seeing your products come to life are really fun. But I would say comparing the two, manufacturing stuff is a little easier, but also depending on it can be very expensive. But I mean, hand making is also a very expensive process. Like I bought so much yarn for my rugs, like to the point that I was like giving stuff to my mom. I was like, please take this. I don't even know what to do with this much anymore. I was like swimming in like yarn and stuff. But yeah, they both have their pros and cons. But yeah, they're all right.
Can you actually tell us about maybe the first time you made something in more of like a communicating with the factory sense?
Yeah, so my first thing, well, first and only thing at the moment that I made talking to a factory were my plushie keychains, my little dainty heart characters. And to be completely honest, that like, I've always wanted to do it. It was not planned at all. Like it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was just sitting in my room, like on Alibaba. That's the manufacturer website that I use. Just like looking at manufacturers and stuff. And that's also another reason why it's very scary, is because it's not like it's just one manufacturer that's listed for you. There's like hundreds, and you like have no idea their products are going to turn out well or not. I mean, they have like examples, but you know, like if you're trying to advertise to someone that I want to work for you, you're going to put like your best stuff forward. Not saying that they aren't good, but you just don't know until like you talk to them and whatnot. But the people that I end up working with, like they sent the sample and it was good. Like, you know, you send your drawings in, talk about sizing. And then like the money aspect comes in, and that was also very like daunting and stuff. And again, all of this is like on a whim, which probably wasn't the best way to do it. But once all that was done, then it's just a lot of waiting, because you get your sample. And I would say that took about a little under a month to get back to me. And it was like the most perfect thing I've ever seen, because I had never seen my art, like my work in that like form before, like a very like tangible, but not tangible in the way that like a canvas is. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like this little character like come to life. And once that's like approved, you then go back and like figure out how many you want to get. And I think I ordered like 50 of them, which even just getting 50 was like so expensive. And then you wait like another month and they send them. But in this case, and I guess this is my like trial and error of working with manufacturers, like I got my sample and it was perfect, But then when I got my final product, it was like nothing like the original. And it was so bad. Like, I keep talking about the price. I don't mind sharing like how much I paid for things, but for like the 50 that I got, I paid about like $650 for 50 like little plushies. And that's like including shipping, which shipping, that was, I've never seen shipping prices that much before. Like that like truly made me feel bad for like international friends who like have to pay like those extreme prices. But yeah, I spent all that money, and then what I got in return was like not at all what they originally had like shown me that they could do. And it was like really heartbreaking, because you put a lot of money into it, and then all this time, like, I mean, it's sometimes a 2-month process. I'm sure mine was shorter because for whatever reason, I didn't decide to like communicate that I didn't like what I saw. But then I guess in the back of my mind, I didn't feel like, I didn't want to go through that whole process of like waiting again. But I mean, now I know for next time. But yeah, it's pretty wild. And now I know for next time, if there's something I don't like, I need to say something. But I guess in this case, that the reason I didn't say anything is because my sample I got was so cute, and everything was like the way I wanted it to be. So not really sure what happened when it came to the final product. But at the end of the day, I am really happy that I was even able to do that. And eventually I want to do that again. It's just a matter of like maybe properly planning and maybe not doing it at 1 o'clock in the morning this time. So yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, if you have the money to do it and like the designs, like I definitely recommend people to like make their own like little toys and things like that. Cause I mean, who doesn't like toys, I guess. So they're very cool.
Absolutely. Do you think you'd work with another factory in the future? Like maybe that would be the way to remedy it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe like looking for another one. I do want to give the original factory I worked with another chance, because while they did like how I, while they, wow, my words, sorry. While I do feel like they did kind of goof up on their end, I definitely think I could have spoken up and said something, considering the time and money I put into it. Like if I want it to look a certain way, I need to speak up and like say something and not just like let stuff like that happen. Because if I don't say anything, it's going to look the way it does. So yeah, I would definitely like go to another, check out another manufacturer, but also maybe on a smaller scale, give the other people another chance to kind of like have another shot at making it right. But I mean, if they goof up again, then that's shame on me, I guess.
For sure. I feel like something I've learned through freelancing the past 2 years, many times in many horrible ways, is that no one is like rooting for you like the way you're rooting for you. Or that's not true, because people really are rooting for you, I think, like friends, that like mm-hmm. that's all nice, but people aren't like fighting for you on the day to day. Like sometimes with clients, it can be like a real battle to get them to agree to like a certain amount of money or to even get them to pay. And you have to be your own best ally if you kind of want to be successful at that, which is hard. And it seems like kind of a similar thing for like, it's hard to be like assertive and be like, it's been 2 weeks, like you promised this money 2 weeks ago, or like this isn't what you the sample you sent. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's so necessary, but such a very learned difficult a learned skill that can be difficult to pick up.
Yeah, and I've always been a very like to myself and like quiet kids like growing up, and I've really slowly starting to come out of that, especially like how you said being freelance, you're kind of just like your own person in your corner. So it's definitely forced me to come out of my shell and like be more assertive and like really like sticking to my guns and being like, hey, we should go this way, and like no, like really, like let's do this, or like I need this, stuff like that. So like really just like being vocal and letting people know what you want or like what you think you should do and things like that. So
Yeah, it's hard being shy, if I can speak for Basha too. We're both very shy. And it takes such a long time to learn to, speak up for ourselves, but it's worth it. Yeah. Yeah, Basha,
I'm
did you
only
want to
shy
talk about college?
sometimes.
Yeah,
I
you're a
feel
lot
like
more
I'm pretty
assertive than I
open.
am. You're very much better than I
It's
am, I
just
will
because
say.
it's a skill. It's
Yeah,
literally
it
just
is.
muscle memory. And
Exactly.
that's,
Yeah,
I guess that's the nice thing about it, right? That like anyone,
it's learning.
yeah, no matter who you are, if you're not assertive right now, you can totally become assertive. It's just the willingness to try and learn.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, as I cut off from Olive from saying, we have some Halloween questions to end this interview.
Oh, I was going to say, did you want to talk about rugs at all, Basha?
Oh, that's so true. Sorry, we keep getting excited about the Halloween part. Yeah, I guess I also toughed a little, so I was, if you want to talk shop, I was wondering, so you do punch needle.
Yeah, so I do punch needle and I have my tufting gun. Well, my mom has my tufting gun right now, but yeah, I do like a little bit of both. You can actually kind of, I know that people can't see it, but you guys can see my like pillows and stuff up there that I
Yeah,
like
I
to
was
do.
wondering. That's so cool.
Yeah, this one is punch needle and then the flower is tufted. But I picked up all of that last year during quarantine when I was on TikTok maybe a little too much and it just started like popping up everywhere. And I just like needed something to do with my hands because I used before I did like digital like 3D work, I was a painter and I really love the physical aspect of painting, like going to buy pieces for a canvas, putting together your canvas, like pulling it on there, staple guns. Like my hands looked really gross after those like sessions of like putting canvases together and stuff. But I really loved that. Like I liked the physical aspect of it. And at the time of me first starting freelancing, it was just like me sitting at my laptop or like on my iPad, just like looking at a screen all day. And I'm like, I need something physical. I'm stuck inside. Like, what do I want to do? And rug making and punch needling came to mind. And it was like exactly what I was looking for because you're like stretching your fabric onto your frame. And then with tufting, you're like literally have this like yarn machine gun on you, just like punching holes through this fabric and even punch needling, just like using your hands constantly. But it's super fun. I love it. It kind of gives me just like I'm a little old grandma, just like sitting in a rocking chair and whatever, doing that. But it's super cool. And just the fact that being able to make a rug is so like accessible now. Like I never like even came across my mind to just, oh, I'm gonna make a rug today. Like that never like crossed my mind or anything. So it's super cool. I love it. And it also kind of forced me to like really think about my designs and like translating that onto like into punch needling or like tufting and stuff. Because I mean, my designs aren't like extravagant, but like I have like big chunky shapes and then sometimes small details. And I was like, okay, well, I can't really do like these tiny, super small details on these rugs. So had me like switching up shapes and like doing more like simple stuff or like more like a graphic design route was like big, bold colors and like solid shapes and things like that. So it's very fun. I like it. And hopefully I can get my tufting gun back from my mom so I can make rugs again.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a super cool medium. I really like it. Okay. Halloween question time, Olive. What do you think?
I think it is finally time for
Okay.
Halloween questions.
If you don't mind. Okay,
Yeah.
good. Okay.
Yeah.
First question. Do you love Halloween?
Yes.
Okay, good. Cool.
what's your favorite Halloween candy?
Ooh. Okay, it kind of depends on how I'm feeling. But I'll do like two different. So like in the chocolate world, my favorite Halloween candy are like Kit Kats and sometimes which other ones? Like the Reese's when they do like the Halloween shapes, those are also very fun. But I really have to be in the mood for Reese's because peanut butter can kind of be a bit much, but Kit Kat's always way to go. But then on the other spectrum of that. Oh, I don't know. What can you do? I like to eat a lot. I guess like Swedish fish maybe, or I don't know. I mean, I like all candy. I can't really like pick one. So yeah.
That's fair. Those are all solid candies, in my opinion. Do you like candy corn? I'm going off script.
Okay, I tried to eat it when I was younger, and it just, like, was not hitting for me. Maybe now I'm a little older, I'll give it a chance, especially because, like, I'm designing my Halloween stickers, and I have candy corn included, so I think it'd be fair for me to munch on a little bit while I'm designing to really get into spirit there, but when I was younger, it was definitely a hard no, but I'm going to give it a chance again this year.
Okay, cool. I'm a candy corn fan, so that was, I was doing a little propaganda there. Because I think it gets a bad rap. The truth is that it's good.
The first time I tried it, I was like, what's going on here? Like, I'm not really sure how I feel about this.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. Did you have a good Halloween last year?
I honestly don't even remember what I did for Halloween last year. I did eat a lot of candy and watch a lot of good movies, like spooky movies. But I don't remember dressing up. We were like stuck inside though, so it's probably for the better. But I did eat lots of candy and watch lots of movies. So I guess, yes, I did have a good Halloween last year.
Cool. And then I think our last one is, if you want to reveal, well, I guess this is coming out on Halloween, so it will be like an early reveal. But if you want to tell us what you're going to be dressing up as, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, so I have two ideas that are kind of floating around right now. Either I'm going to be Steve from Blue's Clues, because that was like my favorite show as a kid. I actually have the salt and pepper shakers and paprika as like my little salt and pepper shakers. Or, and this is totally left field, I'm going to be a traffic cone. No prompt for that, just like, just seem right to just walk around and just like dry an orange cone. So yeah, I'm figuring that out, which one I'm gonna be, but I mean, I'm probably gonna post it online, so by the time that comes, you guys will know what I decide.
Noted. Those are both good. I like the traffic cone. I love traffic cones. Yeah. Okay, excited to see what it's gonna be.
Yes, I'm very excited too.
Okay, well, thank you for taking your early Halloween/Halloween and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. It was great talking to you guys.
Yeah.
You can find Joy's work at joifulton.com.
On Patreon at patreon.com/thedaintyheart. On Instagram at thedaintyheart and at thedaintyrug. And you can shop their goods at thedaintyheart.com.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guest starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander, aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, obviously you've seen me before. I'm pretty rough and tumble, so I don't want the editing to be too crazy, so no. you'll be able to use your best judgment on that.
Oh my god, no. No, we're good. It's, and what I was saying before we got into glitter what I was saying was that
I have some nasty post nasal drip right now. I'm like, let me get away from the mic while I like sorry,
that's bloopers. It's okay.
It's like, would you say it's like eating glass?
Oh, eating glass sprinkles.
Not to sidetrack us right now.
Oh my god.
When we're trying to record this real quick.
It's all good. Okay.
It'll be a good outtake.
It will.